Bill is one of the original members of the regiment from 1957 onwards.
I started off my military career with the South Alberta Light Horse in Calgary, and then in 56 went off on officer cadet training method B. At the end of that training, I, along with about five others, requested we go regular force. We were sent off to Oakville to do the board. At the board, they said, well, we'll send you home and then let you know. I was put on a train and back out west, and I said to myself, well, if I get accepted, I'm going to become a Strathcona. Well, I got a call from 10 personnel depot to come appear, and 5 nights, 6 days later, I got off a train at Fredericton Junction, New Brunswick. I spent 2 months training in the field with the Royal Canadian Dragoons, and then when they left to come back to Petawawa, I went into the regimental location in Gagetown, August of 57. At that particular time, we had no tanks, and we were just getting people on board to fit into the regiment. I was sent down to be the transport officer, waiting for a possible troop later on. As the transport officer, we had a lot going on, getting people settled in, etc. And one of the things I had to do was, after talking with Radley Walters one day, he said, oh, you were originally from a farm, were you? And I said, yes. He said, well, I want you to go out to the training area and get a barn. And you bring the barn in and put it by the water tower, and that's where Princess Louise II is going to be housed. So that was the job of finding a low bed and the necessary people required to lift this building onto the bed, and we put in a barn by the water tower and fenced it off so she had a bit of a paddock to run around in. Later on, I finally... one of the other things while we were there, of course, we young officers were told we never use first names with any of our soldiers, etc., and they were enforcing that. And when Rad came down to the transport, he would see the transport sergeant and he would say, hey, Bali, how's it going? Rad was quite free, but to use first names with all the soldiers he knew from past, but we, of course, referred to them by their rank. A little later on, sent out to be a member of a tank troop, and went out in the field, and all the troop were up in the back deck of the troop sergeant's tank, and I crawled up there, and it was one sergeant, Bill DeBolt. I got up and was meeting the members of the troop, and Sergeant DeBolt said, would you like a cup of coffee? And I said, love one. He, in those days, of course, paper cup, boiled instant coffee, and he passed it to me, and I said, any milk and sugar? He said, milk and sugar? Do you expect your soldiers to steal sugar from the men's mess, bring out here for you to have in your coffee? And how do you expect us to keep milk fresh out here in the field? He said, you must drink your coffee black, sir. So, ever since, I've drank my coffee black. But, you know, the soldiers were there, and you could see, dude, they were sitting back. One, they didn't know was two summers previous, I was a call-out sergeant at the Vernon Cadet Camp, and one Bill DeBolt was the sergeant out there, and I knew him quite well. So he felt quite free of telling me how I should drink my coffee. The normal troop training, etc., out in the field, in 59, off to Germany. And one other thing I did before going, I was sent off to Borden to take the advanced tank gunnery course, and I became a gunnery instructor. Okay, so we arrived in Germany. At that particular time, I was troop leader, 1st Troop C Squadron. When I look back, I was extremely fortunate. I had a chap by the name of P.A. Daniels as my troop sergeant. He's one of the finest gentlemen you would ever run into, and I learned a lot from him. I also had a great tank crew in Joe Simmons, World War II type, as my driver. Patty Lawrence was my operator, and Bob Parsons, my gunner. And away we went for almost 2 years before I was posted out of the regiment. And that's the group that I had, along with the other crews in the troop. We had a great time in Germany doing all sorts of training. I, of course, as a gunnery instructor, spent a little more time up at Bergen-Hollen, where we did all our tank firing, because we ran tank gunner courses. And I went up there as a gunnery officer and spent a fair amount of time at the Bergen-Hollen ranges. We trained in places like Saltau, Senelager, where we did most of our tactical training. One of the occasions in Senelager, we were doing a night move, and in those days you did night moves in jet black conditions. There was no goggles, no thermal sights or anything like that. And one move we're moving, and I had halted, and all of a sudden, wham, I was hit behind by another tank, and it was my friend P.A. Daniels. And he, being quick off the mark, he came up saying, "Hello, Juan, this is Juan Alpha. What did you back up for?" And so away we went. Another time we had to go up and support the Berlin Brigade. Berlin Brigade for the Brits were just bare bones. If anything happened, of course, they were almost considered a write-off as far as the Brits were concerned, NATO was concerned, etc. And they come out, and we met them in Saltau and did tank infantry co-op training with them. And so a lot of it was loading them onto our tanks to move them around. They had minimal transport that they came out with, and that was another interesting experience for the squadron. Holdfast was a major NATO exercise north of Hamburg, where Rad was just in his glory, saying, you know, the Germans hadn't trained, they had changed. They're still laying lots of line to talk by telephone and et cetera, et cetera. And so we had a great time working on that exercise. And one of the things that came from after that exercise was a troop in B Squadron, commanded at that time by Sergeant Slack Mac McKay. And he was told to go from sort of point A to point B, and he looked at his map and he selected this trail, and away we went, away they went. And after they got along a little ways, all of a sudden the tanks started to sink, and what they were doing was going through a peat bog. And after this exercise ended, we, C Squadron, had to provide two troops, which I had one of them, and A Squadron the same, and it took us 2 weeks to recover that tank troop back onto solid ground. You had to build the road with logs and railway ties. We used every railway tie the British Army and the Rhine had, and all sorts of gravel to get those vehicles sort of upright. And it just seemed as if you were starting to get them moving back, they would slide over to the right or the left, and then you had to recover them back up again and get them out. So 2 weeks of doing that. When we finally got the first tank back to fairly solid ground, Rad said he was going to crew command it out, and it was backing out, and we had a high reverse in the Centurion at the time, and away they went, high reverse. And the only problem is, when he got out there, he ran over the hood of his Jeep. He just knocked the engine block right through the engine mounts onto the ground, etc. And afterwards, on the investigation of this thing, we tried to encourage the investigating officer to demand if this individual was a qualified crew commander. Couldn't get him to ask that question.
When Rad took over and started the regiment, what was used to build the teamwork at that time? Rad was such a dynamic leader in himself. And we see stories, and we see the hockey team that they put together. We saw the, you know, basketball teams, things like this. How was that cohesive team made? Because it must have been very cohesive, as almost right from the day they said, you're the eighth of Czars.
Rad emphasized family, and every member of the regiment was a member of the family. Rad made sure that he knew the background of the family, in that I went down to Sussex and Hampton one time with him when he was meeting with people down there, just to ensure that he had things right as far as the regiment is concerned, and we were following all the traditions and the examples that had been previously set for us by the 8th Hussars in the Kennebecasis, Sackville area, all the members of the regiment at that time. We did a fair amount of officer study where we gathered together that he demanded all the principles that we had to follow and be tactically sound when we went out on exercise or in the field. And particularly in Germany, where we had operational areas that we were destined to go to if the wall ever came down at that time and the hordes came upon us. The soldiers were well trained in their trades because he firmly believed in physical fitness, professional knowledge, and professional skill of all your weapon systems. And we did a lot of training based on those three principles.
Okay. So after you left the Hussars for a while, and doing some tasking, so where did you go then?
In early 1962, I was posted out, head of the regiment coming back, and I was posted to Moncton, New Brunswick, and where I worked on what was then called I-Staff in those days, and nowadays it's called RSS. But I worked on I-Staff and was involved with courses being run in Sussex, especially with Colonel Corbett in command at that time. And the only time we had off at Christmas was Christmas Day and New Year's Day. The rest of the time was gunnery course, driving course, that sort of thing. And it was similar at Easter time.
What were they using then down there? Were they
the
using Shermans?
Sherman?
They were doing Sherman
training. Shermans, yep. The Sherman was the tank. And of course, in Borden, I had trained in the Sherman. I had been on the Sherman with the South of Our Light Horse. So I was familiar with the vehicle.
Yeah. But in Germany, you were using the Centurion.
Centurions, yeah. Often we referred to it as the Agony Wagon. It required lots of maintenance. Near the end, going back near the end of my tour, they were shifting a lot of responsibility from the Remy mechs over to the crews. And we were doing such things as changing spark plugs, changing drive sprockets, those sort of things. And so I was one of the individuals selected to go with them and do that training. And for example, changing spark plugs, the fastest we could do it was 13 hours. When you had to get down, and it took ages to get the old plugs out, you even had an articulated wrench to get at two of the plugs down by the oxygen type thing. The crews really didn't like that task if it came up to change spark plugs on the vehicle. Other than if they were out in the field and they wanted to get out of the exercise for a while, they enjoyed that when they were able to do that. Again, I never, going from Germany, I went from one regiment to another type thing. Although I was located in Moncton at the time and there was no 8th Hussar organization there. They were Hampton, Sussex, and Sackville. But I spent a lot of time with them there. You know, when I was first posted out of the regiment to Moncton, I thought, oh, what have I done? Going to Moncton, but you know, fabulous time there. And then it got worse. I was posted to Shallow, Manitoba. And I went out there as a staff captain A, but after during 6 months of my time there, I went to Cyprus as the G3 ops at headquarters Nixon.
So can you tell us a bit about Cyprus?
Well, I was at headquarters Nixon, and we had control of the Canadian battalion, Danish battalion, Swedish battalion, and ensuring if there was movement taking place that they properly handed over from the Swedes to the Danes to the Canadians, whatever that sort of case may be, that they would do that. In Cyprus, we had an armored recce squadron. At the time I was there, it was an RCD squadron that was there, and they did all the escorting of people through the Turk sector of the, or Turks through the Greek sector type thing. Right.
And they were using what vehicles at that time?
Ferrets.
They were using the ferrets, were they?
Yeah.
Okay. In one other interview, one of the speakers was telling me that the ferret itself worked very well in Cyprus because it was quite adept to going into the mountains and doing those types of patrols, whereas in the desert it didn't fare well and they actually used jeeps instead of the ferrets.
Absolutely true. From of course I wasn't in the Gaza Strip at all, but from what the guys were saying there and then seeing the ferret operate on the island, worked well for us.
So, and then you moved from there, you finished your I staff and then you were off to?
To Shiloh to be staff captain at the headquarters there, and there until 66, spring of 66, I was posted back to the regiment Petawawa. Left Shiloh to become adjutant.
And, regimental adjutant, so you did the paperwork.
I did the paperwork. I was the commanding officer's personal officer. And, of course, one of the first things Jimmy Cameron said to me one day when I took a letter in, I said, I see you're using your Webster's Dictionary again. Of course, the Oxford Concise is the Bible for the Canadian military. But I guess he felt that I was using my Webster's on one of the words I had in there. He was another strong CO that we had. He was Ontario Regiment during the Second World War, and following command of the regiment, he went off to the National Defense College at that time. But we did a lot of training. For example, we exercised from Petawawa to Borden, traveling through all the areas around Peterborough and working our way west to Borden and then up to Meaford, and then, of course, back home again.
But so what vehicle were you using?
We were using ferrets at that time, jeeps, mainly jeeps, but we were reconnaissance.
And the regiment was then designated as a reconnaissance regiment at that point.
Correct.
In time? Yes.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah. And my task during that time was to do the recce of the whole exercise area, and grabbed a helicopter and away we went. We'd drop into a farmer's location and say, "You got a nice copse of trees over there. Do you think you'd mind having a squadron spend the night in it?" And went through the whole route getting land clearance for the regiment. Move into various locations at night, which was quite an experience for me to go off and do that.
I
then took over B Squadron as the OC. We were short majors, so I went up and took over B Squadron as OC. Okay. And I became the CAS Combat Group Squadron. And that was where we had the brigade and Petawawa task for North Norway. At that time, the CAS Combat Group dropped the 113 and a half.
Okay.
And so we had all those track vehicles that we had for that task. Fall of 68, I was selected to go to Staff College. The powers to be knew that I would have trouble with peer pressure, so they sent me to Australia for Staff College. Great privilege to do that, but when you're the only sort of Canadian in the group there, you want to hold the flag high, etc. And it wasn't an easy year, but a very professionally rewarding year to do that. I came back and I did a tour in Chilliwack as a company commander at the basic officer training.
Yes.
And then I only put 5 courses through and I got a posting as 2IC of the regiment in Petawawa. Yeah. And I came back and I served as Colonel John Beveridge and George Kells.
But you then did a tour in Gagetown at the school, is that correct?
Prior to that, I went off to Fort Knox, Kentucky for 3 years at the Armour School, Armour Center.
Yes.
From the regiment to Knox, up to the school, I had about 10 years running that I was dealing in armor subjects the whole time.
Yeah.
At Fort Knox, the XM-1 was under trials, and they had a year-long test of all night vision equipment, which was extremely interesting, right from the passive goggles to thermal sights and on vehicles, off vehicles, etc. So during that year-long test, I spent a lot of time out at night in the field with them. And actually, I had enough time out there that I rewrote the 2-hour block of night operations for the command and staff department while I was there.
And so you made use of all those nighttime hours.
I enjoyed that. And although I was liaison officer, I would go out and do various things with them all the time. And from there, I was posted up to be chief instructor at the school.
Okay.
And at that time, we still had the old Centurion with the school. And as CI, program courses, all those aspects of the school. And then we got word we were getting the Leopard tank and that we were getting the AVGP with a 75mm gun. And so involved in the start of the introduction to that. And then I guess because I've been through 2 years of that, when I got promoted to Lieutenant Colonel, I stayed right there as Commandant.
Yes. And we stayed finished, the duration.
Finished off the introduction of the Leopard and the other vehicles.
The AVGP class, the Grizzlies and Cougars and whatever.
Yeah, yeah. Fair amount of firing. We even ran courses 24 hours a day to get the RCD operationally fit as quick as we could. In the gunnery squadron, the guys were finished in the daytime, and at nighttime they would move into the classrooms. And the only time we had to do was out in the ranges where the night classes, etc., would have to spend some daytime out in the ranges.
Yeah.
But as far as I was concerned, it went pretty smoothly, and we had them all set to go.
Yeah.
In that period of time.
So is that where you finished your career at that point?
No, you went
on through to Ottawa after that. Is that correct?
I went to Ottawa as Deputy Director of Armour.
That's
so right. That for 3 years, and that finished up my 10 years direct as working in the Armour field.
In the Armour field,
Interesting job working with, we didn't just have 4 regiments in the Army, we had 22 regiments type thing. We had a lot of great reserve regiments that were out there dedicating themselves to being professional armor soldiers.
So when you were there as the deputy director, those the reserve regiments would have been focusing, the armored guys would have been focusing on the Cougars a lot.
Yeah.
And I'm assuming then that the regular regiments were focusing on the Leopard. So you really had two
two focuses at one time going on.
Yep. There was still a fair amount of reconnaissance in there too, because of the lack of vehicles and that, especially gunnery training to get people up to speed on that. Mm-hmm. The driving and maintenance wasn't too bad, but to get people away to the ranges was a little more difficult.
More difficult. And there was a lot of training done at night then, as I can well recall.
And then I went off to 7 U.S. Corps in Stuttgart, Germany. And I was G3 exercises for them. My office was responsible for the planning, coordination and execution of all NATO exercises.
And that involved the Americans, the British, the Canadians?
Well, no, mainly 7 Corps.
Oh, mainly 7
Corps. Okay. Somebody said to me, how was your growing experience of moving into that job? I said, pretty simple. I just went from one organization, 80,000 in Ottawa, to another one over here of 80,000. The 7 Corps always put up the largest forward deployed corps in the world. Yeah. And they were big. Hmm. They were big.
And so they were entirely an American corps, though, is that
correct?
Right?
Yeah. The Canadian tie-in with that, of course, the 4 Brigade could be operationally tasked with the 7 Corps.
Okay.
And on the flank of 7 Corps was 2nd German Corps, where was another place for the 4 Brigade.
Yeah. Okay. So they could have been tasked either way, depending on the situation, the tactical situation.
Yeah. That time in 7 Corps was probably the hardest job I had in my career. 4 exercises on the go. One that we're just thinking about, getting it coordinated, or another one that we're running it up, or running it, and another one we're writing the after-action report. Very, very professionally rewarding. Mm-hmm. And we had a great brigade in LAR, which I made a lot of noise about in 7 Corps, about how the professionals were doing. For example, one of the exercises we had to conduct was the evacuation of dependents, closing of schools, PXs, commissaries, etc., if and when the wall came down and they crossed it. The Americans had the University of Maryland campus in Munich, and in the summertime when the students were all gone, we moved into the university and ran the exercise right there. Using the classrooms and the dorms for people and that sort of thing, and put all the various community staffs through this exercise of how do you get them out of there and onto planes and close the commissaries, close the banks, close all these things. It was quite a detailed exercise that you had to go through.
And would you do that each year or would
each
that
year? Each year. Yeah, ran one in the summertime each year. Then I went to Ottawa as Director of Reserves, and that was the time of Perrin Beatty in Minister of Defense, and there was a real big push for the reserves, and we Army were looking at training centers. At that particular time we were looking at Aldershot, Meaford, and Wainwright, and did all the planning for that. And then we thought, Aldershot should be our first one to make a go, but Meaford being in Beattie's constituency, that's where the first one went. But I was only in the month, in the job 10 months when the general said, call your purse rep. And so I called out the purse rep. He said, how would you like to go to London? And I said, sure. And he said, well, don't you think you should ask your wife? And I said, well, if I have to. And so I finished my career as the one of the senior liaison officers at the Canadian Defence Liaison Staff in London.
In London.
And that's where I finished up.
Okay. How long were you actually on the ground in London?
4 years. For 36 years, I wore the 8th Hussar headband. Yeah. I was not shifted to another regiment.